All right, man. You need some more monitors, dude.
How are you doing, Bart?
Very good, thank you.
Good to see you again.
Yep.
So we're here visiting Bart DeSmet. Obviously, incredible developer, RX, what used to be Volta, etc. Mm-hmm. And I just noticed that there's this thing over here. It looks like the Windows 8 developer preview. Does RX work?
Yep.
It does?
So one of the things we've done in this release is enable RX to work in Windows 8 Metro-style applications.
Excellent. So what kind of work did that involve to get that?
Not that much, actually, because the projections that the CLR does to the WinRT are pretty good, actually. So there's not that much to be done on the type level. A couple of things involve, like, from events pattern, our bridge to .NET events. Mm-hmm. The events in WinRT are slightly different, so they don't have the same signatures for the add and remove methods. They actually do something with an event registration token, which is a little structure they return in return of doing a subscription or adding an event handler. And the removal needs to have that same thing. It's like close handle equivalent kind of things, right? You know, you get a handle for the subscription and then you can dispose it off. And that's very close to the RX model where, you know, subscribing gives you back an iDisposable and the iDisposable closes the subscription. So we enable that as well. So if you now do just from event pattern in a Windows XAML UI application, a Metro style application, you can just do it as you always did before, and it just works.
Excellent. Yep. Very, very cool. Mm-hmm. Now, what else? I mean, clearly we're here because we visit you, I guess, quarterly. Seems to be the pattern.
Something like that, yeah.
And you guys are updating RX with a new release.
Yep.
And you wanted to tell us about what you've done. Clearly, Windows 8 developer preview support, Metro Style Apps.
Yeah, that's one of the things.
Rock and roll, man.
It's basically the release that sort of focuses on the .NET 4.5 feature sets. And .NET 4.5 and Windows 8 are pretty close in terms of, you know, 4.5 supporting Windows 8 features. So it's the big theme is .NET 4.5 and things that fall out of that. And so, I have a list over here of some of the things we actually did, because it's quite a lot to keep track of. But let's just talk about a couple of things.
Okay.
So one of the new things that .NET 4.5 actually has is this thing called EDI, or Exception Dispatch Info. Mm. It's a feature that was actually put in place for the async await support in the TPL, or for task of T. And so one of the things that has historically been problematic with exception handling is when you actually catch an exception and you propagate it without support of the runtime, meaning you don't do throw and all of those things. But you take the exception object, you marshal it to some other place, and then you throw it again, the call stack is gone, the original call stack. Same with Watson bucket IDs, which is for, like, you know, the Windows error reporting services. Like, all of that information is gone if you re-throw an exception by doing throw EX.
Okay.
That EX is an existing exception object. And that's really unfortunate because, like, if you would do that for, like, an await kind of situation, what's really going on there is you're awaiting some task of T, and the place where the exception originates from is typically the completion thread, where, you know, the I/O completes or whatever. And then that exception gets wrapped in an aggregate exception just to maintain that call stack, and then if you would come out of the await, you would get an aggregate exception that doesn't really make sense. So the thing they did is they enabled something called EDI, or Exception Dispatch Info, that allows you to capture the call stack of an exception and basically propagate it as is.
Cool.
And so we now have that in RX as well, meaning if you basically have an exception leaking out of RX, because we have a different way of propagating exceptions using the onError channel of an observer, but if an exception comes out, we actually will propagate that using EDI. So that's actually what's going on there.
Excellent. Cool. And how was that in terms of your experience of implementing?
Pretty simple, yeah.
Okay.
Like, historically, we've actually had something like that in RX. It's actually used an internal member of .NET Reflection, which you're not supposed to do, like, you know, calling to an internal member. So we actually got rid of that in the official release of RX, but now we have an official way of doing it. And so all the sites where we used to cure an exception with this stack preserving technique, now we're using Exception Dispatch Info for that. And so that means if you do something like you have a sequence and you do dot first on it, and it throws an exception, well, the exception comes out through regular exception propagation, because first actually takes in an iObserver of T and returns a T, and there's no channel anymore to put the exception other than regular exception flow, right? So we throw the exception internally. But the exception has gone through the on-error channel of the observable till the point it actually needs to be rethrown. And so now we cure that with that EDI stuff. So essentially you get the full stack trace and you know where the exception originally comes from. Mm-hmm. In the past it was sort of cut off and it always came from something in Rx, which doesn't make sense because you don't know where the problem comes from.
Excellent. Now in the .NET 4.5, the VCL, they sort of, because of the work they did for Windows 8, they kind of actually made .NET a little leaner and meaner. And so there's sort of the removal of developers having to choose between dispose and close. Now it's one thing. It's dispose. So I guess really what I'm trying to get to here is what sort of changes that were made to VCL impacted you? So that you had to make changes to make it work or take advantage of what was given to you. That's
There's a lot of stuff that we've done for the async support.
Cool.
So maybe to put a little bit things in perspective here, right? So the async support in C# and VB with the async and the await keywords is just absolutely fantastic to do like sequential control flow with asynchrony involved. Like you can do await some operation, like a file IO operation, and then you can just write the code as is, right? You can put while loops and fors and usings and everything, like exception handling, it just works. That works very well for single value asynchrony, which is the vast majority of asynchronous programming. It's like you knock on the door of like some web stream and you say, please download the string asynchronously. Well, you just get one string back, right? You don't get like multiple chunks. So it's not an event stream. It's like, you know, single value asynchrony. And so when we started Rx, we didn't have task of T in the BCL. It was just in like a developer preview of the TPL. And still we don't have it on all the platforms. Now Silverlight is adding it, so there are, you know, it's catching up there. But like with Rx, we couldn't take a dependency on task of T as the way to represent single value asynchrony. Now at the same time, Rx is about multi-value asynchrony. But to make samples really look nice with Rx, well, we had to bridge with single value asynchrony as well without having task of T support everywhere just yet. And so as a result, we have things like observable from async pattern, which is a way to take a begin-end invoke pair, an APM pattern, and basically bridge that to an iObservable of T. And then you can use that in composition with other operators. You can do like timeout, you can do like select many, like very beautiful things. Now the task of T is the standard way of doing things. Well, we don't really need from async pattern anymore because people can always convert an async pattern to a task and then the task can be converted to an observable in case you want to do composition using Rx. So those things where the BCL actually has task of T as the way to represent single value asynchrony, we're fully embracing that now. Which means like observable from async pattern in the 4.5 build for Rx will actually be obsolete. Meaning you can still use it today, but you know, in the end we want people to use like the async bridges that task provides. Now at the same time, that bridge is not that necessary anymore. Like from async pattern with begin and invoke pairs is not very relevant anymore in the BCL because the new way of representing asynchrony is not having a begin and invoke pair, but having just a method that's suffixed with async and returns a task. So like now you have download string async and it takes, or it returns a task of T, or a task of string in that case. So to bridge that with Rx, you don't need to do anything really. You just get a task of T object and you can always convert it to an observable. Now, we've done something more there, actually. If you want to compose those tasks of T with, like, some iObservable sequence, like, a typical sample that we have is dictionary suggest, right? We always use it because it sort of shows a lot of things. It shows how to bridge with the existing world, like .NET events and asynchronous methods. It shows how to do composition. It shows how to do, you know, use link operators, all of those things. But so the sample is basically do something like, you know, from the text that has changed in the text box, from suggestions in web service call given the input of the text box. So two from clauses. It's like doing a join between a text box and a web service. That's really what's going on. So historically what you did for the second source, the source that actually talks to the web service given the user's input, you did observable.from async pattern around the web service proxy begin match and end match methods that calls into the web service that has a dictionary. So you always had to do all that, you know, ceremony to get into that. Now with .NET 4.5, if you generate a web service proxy, you don't get a begin end invoke method anymore. You actually get an async pattern method, so you get something that returns a task. So it's already nice. Now you could write something like from word in text box, from suggestion in service dot match of the word, and then you have a task of desetting there, and then you would do two observable on that, because then you can compose it using from select in Rx. Now for those places, we actually went one step further. We said, like, it's kind of natural to sort of take an iObservable and do a select many with a task of T. Well, the language doesn't really care how it finds those overloads. So basically we put in an overload to select many that returns a task of T. So that means now you can literally write from word in text box, from suggestion in web service.match of word. And that thing returns a task of T, but we will convert it for you to an iObservable of T. And you stay on the ship of Rx and doing your composition there. So
nice.
So that's like, you know, embrace and extend, if you will. Like, you know, task of T is a great abstraction for single value asynchrony. We are doing the event streams. Mm-hmm. So we say, like, where single value asynchrony is involved, always go to task of T. Like, iObservable of T is kind of a little bit weird there, because, like, well, yeah, single value is a special case of a multi-value stream, of course, but, like, if you know it's a single value, you can make the experience somewhat nicer. And that's what the wait does, right? The wait allows you to unpack a single value out of a task of T or get the exception back. And so if you want to go to the multi-value thing, you can always convert a task of T to iObservable of T. But iObservable of T as an abstraction for single value asynchrony is something we don't do out of the box anymore. Like, we don't do from async pattern, because in the BCL, you already have a great abstraction for that. It's task of T. So it's basically that kind of separation of concerns, if you
Excellent.
Will.
Excellent. Yeah. It's a lot cleaner.
Yeah, it's clean. Like, you know, if you have a task, you can just go with that. If you have an iObservable, you can always convert between the two.
I mean, it's actually really interesting, because one of the things that I think a lot of developers learned at the Build conference is that asynchrony is the deal.
Yep, exactly.
In Windows 8, in Metro, it's all about asynchronous. Yep. Everything must happen asynchronously. So people are going to have to learn how to program asynchronously.
Exactly. Yep.
And so it's nice to see that they have these choices between the single value kind of experience and the Rx, which, you know, Rx certainly is a little bit more complicated from a developer perspective in terms of composition.
Yeah, you need to think in terms of operators to do the composition.
Yes.
As opposed to, like, async and await, which is just, like, write your code as it would be in the synchronous world, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But right on. It's nice to see that this is happening.
And actually, we have await support for observable as well, right? So we did that before. Actually, we fixed a number of things there. Maybe we should talk about it as well.
Rock and roll.
So so we've had historically...
Oops, I said rock and roll. Sorry.
Oh.
But continue.
Okay.
I'm not allowed to say that anymore. People are giving me a hard time.
In the forums?
I don't know what's wrong with saying rock and roll. So
I like
sorry,
it, so
everybody out there.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Yep. So so we've had the await support historically in Rx since the first async CTP or something. We put it in place. And so awaiting, basically an iObservable of T, is kind of a decision problem. Meaning, like, you have a multi-value thing, and what people expect to get back out of an await is, like, a single-value thing. So what's the thing you get back? So we pick to give you the last value of the sequence. So if you await an iObservable of T, you get the last value back. We don't collect all of the values of the observable, because, like, that could be a memory leak, right? You could do, like, await something, and then you would collect all the values of the sequence, but if you await mouse moves, well, good luck with that. Like, you know, you're going to end up with an out-of-memory exception. So we chose the last value, which means you can always get all the values as well, because we have operators that condense an entire sequence into a single value. Like iObservable of T to iObservable of list of T using the toList operator. So you can always take the sequence, do toList, it's still asynchronous because it's an iObservable of list, and then you can await that. And then you know, if you get an out-of-memory exception, it's not the await operator to blame, it's the to-list part that you put in place there. But so awaiting gets the last value, which is really nice, because if you have a task of T, you convert it to an iObservable of T, and you await that, you get exactly the same behavior as if you would await the original task. Because, well, a task has a single value also happens to be the last value. So so you get all of that basically in there for free, which means that you can write a sequential flow of things using await and iObservable if the iObservable happens to have, you know, a single value meaning to it, which can be the case, right? You can start with a multi-value thing and then start filtering things out, and at some point you might know it just has a single value left, maybe because you're aggregating the sequence. Like if you say, I have stock quote information, I take a whole window of stock quotes for a whole day, and then I do dot average on that. Well, average is an iObservable of T with a single value in it. It's still an iObservable because we want to be able to compose with all the other operators. Like you want to take the iObservable and do dot timeout, for example, or dot delay, or whatever. Like all those operators you still want to have. But the fact it's a single value thing allows you to await it as well. So you can just await that iObservable of T, and you get a single value back. And so you have all of that regular control flow kind of things as well, without having to go to task first, because the await support in the language is based on a pattern. So everyone can implement it, essentially. Now, we did a couple of fixes there. So the await support we had was kind of weird. And the reason is it didn't really play by the rules of await. So what's the rules of await? Well, say that you're in a UI thread, right? In a UI application, in a button click event handler or something. And you await a task of T. Well, what's going to happen to your code is that everything that runs after the await is lifted into the continuation of the task. Where does that run? Typically on the task pool. So what's the problem now? Well, the problem is that the code that was before the await was running on the UI thread, and the code after the await is now on the task pool. And if you would touch the UI there, well, you end up with a thread violation exception, right? Like the single thread department and all of that stuff, like things blow up. So await actually captures the synchronization context and posts back to that when the await completes. We didn't do that in Rx, so we had a free-threaded world in Rx, which means after the await in your sequential looking code, you might be in some different place, different scheduler, which is totally undesirable for people. You could still fix that by doing observe on, which is one of our operators, but then every time you do an await, you would have to put observe on in place as well, and you know, things sort of start, the assumptions of await being the same as the synchronous code, but just now asynchronous, meaning it runs in the same place, would be totally violated.
Well, you'd have to manually synchronize, right?
Exactly, and that's not the point of await.
Not the pattern, yeah. Exactly.
So so we put that in, like we now post back to the synchronization context when you started. So that's another change there.
Great.
Some more things include the asynchrony that I talked about, the single value asynchrony. We had a couple of blocking operators in Rx, which sort of have been the needle in the eye in some sense. Like we had first, last, and single, which go from iObservable of T to T, which means they block, right? They block till they receive the value or get an exception. That's still fine. You know, you might want to block on those, but why couldn't you have the asynchronous versions of those as well? So you have first async, last async, single async now, that return an iObservable of T, and you can await those. So instead of doing dot first on observable, which is incredibly blocking, or definitely dot last is incredibly blocking, if it's an infinite sequence, you're stuck forever. Instead of doing that, now it's much better or easier to write await sequence dot last async. And last async returns an iObservable, which supports await, so now you do the same thing but asynchronously. So you're not blocking the application in using those operators.
Okay.
So again, you know, first, last, and single, those operators will have a little attribute on top of it saying, like, if you're on .NET 4.5, the attribute will be there saying, like, if you use that, please consider using the asynchronous version, because, you know, asynchrony is there, it's very easy to use now, and just use the await keyword, so why wouldn't you? Like, in the past, it would be like, yeah, well, if we would give you first,
returning an ISO of T, well, you would have to do a subscribe, and you would have to twist your control flow logic inside out, right? Which is all the way it actually solves.
Yes.
So, again, that's another case where it's totally embracing that pattern. Where you say, like, blocking operators in Rx, you don't really have them anymore. Same with for each, which used to be called run at some point. For each was a void returning method that basically runs through the whole sequence and blocks till the whole sequence completes. Now we have a for each async, which returns a task. So you can await the sequence completing, you know, iterating through all the values, and then move on with your life. But again, you're not blocking the caller in awaiting for each async. But for each, you would block the caller. So again, some more asynchrony there.
Excellent. Yeah. So one of the questions I would have, I mean, we talk a lot about asynchrony and asynchronous, asynchronous computation in general. Certainly Rx is beautiful for that environment, but there's also the notion of parallelism. And so a stream of data, I want to not just do things asynchronously, but I actually want to funnel them into n number of computing clusters, if you will. In other words, I want to compute over this giant stream of data in parallel. What work have you done there, and how would I normally think about that?
Okay. So yeah, in Rx, it's totally possible to partition a stream and then have, you know, substreams. So for example, if you do group by, for example, you do group by on an iObservable of T, well, you get an iObservable of iObservables back, which contains the values of each individual, you know, segment, if you will, or each individual group. Same with windowing operators, where you can window things or partition things based on windows of time or amounts of values and all of that. Now, when you have those different observables that come out of the original sequence, well, those, if you do some operators on top of those, you can always put in schedulers there that say, like, you know, do some computation on that partition of the stream and do it on that scheduler. And schedulers are allowed to introduce concurrency. That's their reason for existence in Rx. So that's where you end up having, you know, like, computation offloaded to worker threads or task pools or all of those things. So so the fact you have a multi-value thing sort of enables, in this case, to partition up the stream and do things in parallel, just like plink does for link to objects, right? You start with an ienumerable of T, you make it a parallel enumerable of T, and then you can do things like .where and .select, and things can go in parallel. Similar things you can do in Rx. All the ingredients are there. It's not that there is something like parallel Rx or something, but, you know, you have the scheduler abstraction, so you can take different things and essentially go for
it. Totally. Now, are you seeing things out in the real world when people use your product, I mean, when they're using Rx? Do you see them using it sort of with PPL, like, you know, the parallel patterns library? I mean, parallel for each and then do some two observable stuff inside of that. How does that work? Does it work?
Well, the parallel for each has some different kind of signature that doesn't really work with the iObservable.
That was just a random example.
But like, we've seen people compose, you know, Rx with those other parallel mechanisms.
Cool.
So, you know, you can totally do it. And in fact, some work that we did for the Windows 8 support here as well is introduce new schedulers. So we have two new schedulers that allow you to offload work to the thread pool in WinRT. So they have a new thread pool there, which is, you know, native implementation surfaced through native code. So you can actually bridge with that. So if you want to schedule some work for any Rx operator, you can actually schedule that on the WinRT thread pool now. You can also schedule it on the core dispatcher, which is the equivalent to the dispatcher on Silverlight and WPF. It lives in Windows UI.core, I believe. It's called core dispatcher. And so on every window, a core window, you can ask for the dispatcher. So people in Rx have historically been able to write observe on dispatcher and Silverlight and WPF and Windows Phone. Now you can do exactly the same in WinRT to synchronize back onto the UI scheduler. So we've encapsulated those two schedulers as well as iScheduler implementations. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Very nice, man. And the other question I'd ask, I mean, of course, is what happened to the RxJS?
RxJS, oh, very good news. We're actually going to ship it pretty soon again. So we've updated it to be on par with the 6.21 build of Rx, which is the official v1.0 stable release with support. We've actually done the work. Actually, Matthew has done all of the work. You know, Matthew Podlasaki.
Yes.
And so
right
he's the RxJS superstar now.
Right on.
And he's done a lot of work there.
Okay.
We're actually putting the finishing touches on it with regards to packaging it up and, you know, making the setup, which is release and file in this case, work and, you know,
mm-hmm.
have everything nicely bundled up, and we'll actually publish it pretty soon as well.
Awesome. Yep. And I bring that up only because, mm-hmm. of course, in this new age of WinRT,
yep. mm-hmm.
it's all about the happiness of and.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can do things in
yes.
C# or JavaScript or yep. C++,
mm-hmm.
and I'm still waiting to get the news from you that when mm-hmm. RxC comes out. Now, we don't know when that's going to be or if it's
yep.
going to happen,
mm-hmm.
but I know you have a native dev on the team.
Yes, we do. Yep.
Who's working on other things right now.
Yep.
And even Eric is hacking native code.
Oh, he's been in there.
Oh, he's been in there, man.
Yep.
Eric.
yep.
Which is nice to see. But
mm-hmm.
anyway, the big tent picture. So,
yep.
rock and roll, man.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit more about some of the things that people can actually get their hands on. Now,
yep.
last time we had you and Wes on,
mm-hmm.
We talked about your new shipping schedule.
Oh, yeah, yeah. yeah.
And so you're going to have sort of the out of the band,
mm-hmm.
you know, play around with these kind of
yes.
releases.
Yep.
This is not
the experimental release.
The experimental release, thank you.
Yep.
And then the real solid.
Exactly.
What's going on here in this release?
So for this one, it will purely an experimental one.
Purely experimental.
Okay. Because if we do like a stable release, which we could do, like stable doesn't mean supported. You know, stable basically means it's an API that won't change.
Yes.
We can't really do a stable for all the things that we do with WinRT and .NET 4.5 because things are developed at preview, right?
Yes.
We can't depend on a preview not to change. Like, that's insane.
Yes.
So we don't have a stable release this time. Similarly, the version number will have to boost at some point. So mm-hmm. we still will have the experimental be 1.1 and moving on, which means if people have a dependency on the experimental release on NuGet, they will get upgraded to the new version. That's like if you buy into an experimental, you sort of stay on the experimental boat.
Great.
Until you say, I want to snap it and go to the stable one. With the stable one, we couldn't really do that. Even if you would ship an update,
mm-hmm.
you would have everyone who uses 1.0, the 6.21 build, would get a new upgrade because NuGet would push an update to the 1.0 band. So
mm-hmm.
at some point, likely, we'll end up with 1.2 and 1.3. 1.3 being experimental and 1.2 being the new stable. So just shift everything in the spectrum of minor revisions or version numbers. But at this point, a 1.1 build that supports .NET 4.5 and Silverlight 5.
Okay.
With all the new goodness that we've been talking about.
Sure.
Yep.
Excellent.
So maybe I should show you the thing running.
I think that would be excellent.
Like, you've been promising that it works, but nobody
yeah.
has to believe me, right?
Right on. Let's see it in all of its metro glory.
Oh, yeah. So let's try to log in. So there's a new assembly, actually, in Rx now, which is called System Reactive Windows Runtime. Actually, the code is more interesting than that, but
okay.
that's the one that contains things that you would have before in system.reactive.windows.threading for Silverlight and WPF, for example,
mm-hmm.
Which is the reactive support for a particular API, in this case for Windows Runtime, of course. And so some of the things that are in there include the two new dispatchers, or the two new schedulers, I mean, like the core dispatcher and the thread pool scheduler. So those two things are in there. We have some bridges to async info, which is an interface that WinRT uses to represent asynchronous operations. So we have some bridges to that as well. But typically you would go through task of T because those represent single value asynchronous operations. So those bridges are in there to experiment around a little bit. And then we have some dispatcher observable, which contains the observe on dispatcher that you can actually use. So just a couple of examples here. This is what you always could write before. So this is just a test case that has some title and some event handler sitting here. And so what I'm doing here is I'm doing observable from event pattern for key down events on my form, or whatever you call, you know, the canvas of a metro style application, you know.
Sure.
My window, if you will.
The UI.
The UI, yeah.
There you go.
So So I can listen to the key down events, and this is the reflection-based overload that actually gets my our hands on the key down event, and that's the one that had to change to support the WinRT-style event handlers. Mm. I can actually dive into that in just a moment a little bit deeper. But if I execute this, what you will see is I will actually get events, so it's just my test cases here, but we'll do event pattern non-generic, and I can start typing here. You see, I typed hello, and you see hello sort of changing on top there. And now it goes to stopped. That's because we disposed the subscription to the observable sequence. Mm. So that's the way to unhook an event handler. So I can start it again, and you know I can type hello, and you see it go, and then at some point the subscription goes away. And so the way I've done that is actually sort of a marriage between both iObservable and the new async support. If you look at this piece of code here, actually zoom in a little maybe, or is that fine?
That's fine.
Okay. So what I have here is an event handler, essentially, that gives me the text box that's sitting next to the button. That's the way I write my test cases. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm doing is this. I get the event sequence using observable from event pattern. I basically translate that, you know, the events to the keys that have been pressed by the user, which are virtual keys. So I have an iObservable virtual key at this point. And then I do a subscribe here that changes the text box. So I'm doing text.text equals the virtual key to string. Hmm. But that subscription returns an iDisposable, as we know. And when you dispose that, the event handler is gone. Now, how does the event handler go away? I'm just awaiting inside the using block for 5 seconds. That means after 5 seconds, the await will come back. It will actually print that the text has stopped or that the event handler has been unhooked, and it will unhook the event handler. Mm. So you see, by putting an await inside the using block in an async method, you can basically have a subscription that's valid for 5 seconds. So that's essentially the test case I have sitting here.
Okay.
That's the same one, but then with a generic parameter, then you get some more static typing, which we already had in Rx before. It's just I need to have all the test cases here, right? So mm-hmm. I have this one as well. To talk a little bit about what had to change internally, because I know the Niners are geeks and they like to know how things work.
Yes, they do.
So those reflection-based overloads, people have a love-hate relationship with those. They're darn easy because, well, you just specify the object and the name of the event handler that you want to hook to. But the thing is, if the event name changes, well, you don't get refactoring support, and you have this magical string sitting there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So alternatively, you can always write this thing, where you do a conversion from a delegate to another delegate, and then you have to add an event handler and remove an event handler. Like, it's quite a bit of boilerplate to bridge to an event. So a lot of people like this one, even though it uses some string and it uses some reflection inside. Now, the reflection isn't a bad thing. You know, the reflection is a one-time cost when you do a subscribe. You can even cache all of that information. Like, it's not the end of the world. It doesn't slow down the sequence at all.
I thought you couldn't use reflection in a WinRT application.
Okay, so this is actually a .NET 4.5 library.
Okay.
That you can always refer to inside Metro-style application.
Absolutely, as long as you don't have it in your public sealed files.
Exactly. That's what's going on.
Rock and roll. Yeah.
So it's like just another component of the BCL or whatever, right?
And got it.
Without being in the BCL, but it's like a system.reactive assembly.
I mean, that's
can talk to the full CLR.
Yeah. Beautiful. That's an important point that people need to understand.
Yep.
As long as you're not exposing your code to the rest of the Metro system, you can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as you used to.
Yeah.
But it's when you want to communicate with other applications that speak different languages, because WinRT is really the reimagining of COM.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone has to play in that world to be able to communicate.
Yep.
JavaScript doesn't speak C++ or C#,
exactly,
and vice versa.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So it's actually a very beautiful and well-thought-out, well-engineered model.
Mm-hmm.
But there is some confusion out there, so I'm glad that that we talked about this.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yep. So so the way those events work, for us to be able to have this reflection-based overloads, we need to recognize a different pattern inside, because let me actually go into ILDESM to show you how those event handlers look. So totally geek out. So this dot key down is the event declared on UI element in XAML here. like as you can see, I'm in the UI element system or windows.ui.xaml, key event handler. So that's just declared as if it's a .NET event, right? Public events.
Mm-hmm.
That's because WinRT uses the same metadata, so it looks like an event. Now, if we go into this WinMD file, which you can open in ILDASM, as a lot of miners will already know, I guess. If you open this, and you actually start navigating here to the UI element type, just a second here, they're alphabetic, I could actually have scrolled a little quicker. But so if you go here, you see the event is sitting here somewhere, the key down event. Here it is. And, you know, an event always refers to its add and remove methods, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have an add-on method and a remove-on method, which points to two methods that are sitting there. And so now if you look at the signature of those methods, like the add key down event, for example, here we go, it looks as follows. The add event takes in the key event handler, which is the delegate that's going to receive updates from the event. But it doesn't return void, instead it returns an event registration token. And that's different from .NET events. .NET events have an add method that takes in a delegate and returns void.
Mm.
How does the remove method look like? Well, in a .NET event, the remove method takes in the delegate and returns void. So internally there is some memory that sort of knows, like, that's the one I've added. That's called a multicast delegate, essentially. Like, you add that delegate to it, it's getting appended, like delegate.combine. And then when you remove it, it gets removed. And it basically gets taken out of that list of event handlers. So in WinRT, it's different in the sense that we take in a key event handler, we return an event registration token, and the remove method then doesn't take in the delegate, but it takes in the event registration token that we need to get rid of. Mm. So it's like a close handle kind of thing in classic Windows, right? Like, you get a resource, what you get back is a number representing the resource, and later you can talk to the API again to say, shut down the resource corresponding with this handle. So it's a very similar mechanism where you have now a token that represents the event handler, which is the same model as Rx, really. In Rx, you pass in an observer to the subscribe method. There's no unsubscribe method that takes in an observer. There is just a disposable that comes out of the subscription, and if you dispose that one, you get rid of the observer that was associated with the sequence.
Interesting.
So the mapping is much easier in some sense, but we need to recognize it. Because now an event can have those two signatures. It can have the .NET style signature with an add and remove method and both take in a delegate, or it can be the WinRT style that the add method takes in the delegate, returns the token, and then the remove method takes in the token and returns void.
Mm.
So the reflection style API that we have in WinRT, well, not WinRT, in the Rx bridge for WinRT actually supports this better. So can just write code as you always did before.
Awesome.
Yep. And then we have the scheduler one sitting here, so let's actually show that one as well.
Okay.
So the scheduler sample that I have running somewhere is this one. So WinRT thread pool scheduler.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm doing in this sample, let's actually try to find the code here. The WinRT sample thread pool scheduler sample, here you go. We have a thread pool scheduler.instance in our new namespace, System Reactive Windows Runtime. So that's the wrapper that represents an ICE scheduler that talks to the thread pool in WinRT. And then I'm doing a generate here, observable generate, and as the miners will know that have played with Rx, all the operators in Rx that introduce concurrency, that need to produce values somewhere, actually take in an optional scheduler. So the scheduler to generate is the place where we'll actually compute 0, 1, 2, 3, and signal the onNext messages on the observer, right?
Okay.
So that's where the work is actually happening. So what I'm doing here is I'm asking the thread pool scheduler to compute those values. So now it's the WinRT, in fact, that's allocating a thread from the thread pool, and basically our scheduler is running on top of that, so you can schedule work there, which become .NET delegates, of course, that come back to the CLR. So that's what's going on here. Now, if you do that, this sequence is actually running in the background, right? It's running on a different thread, so you can't update the UI from that thread. So in order to make that work, you do observe on dispatcher. And the observe on dispatcher now comes from the System Reactive Windows Runtime. and knows how to talk to, let's take a look, that's actually the RX code, it's very simple for this one. It does source.observe on core dispatcher scheduler.instance. And that's our wrapper for the core dispatcher functionality in Windows, Windows.ui.
Mm.
So, no surprise there. Like, yep. It's two places where you can schedule work. Mm-hmm. Places where you can schedule work, we've always abstracted using iScheduler in Rx.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two new places in WinRT. We can just wrap those as iSchedulers, and people can just write code as they always did before.
Excellent.
And so if I run that code, you will actually see just a little counter coming over here, 0, 1, 2. That's actually the thread pool scheduler in WinRT computing those values,
okay,
or calling back to us to compute those values. So the work is really happening on the thread pool there. And they're being sent back, you know, the text update events are actually coming back to the UI thread using the observe on dispatcher.
Mm.
So no surprise there, things that people could write all the time before.
Great.
Yep.
Great, man.
So
it's really nice to see. I mean, the mm-hmm. you know, RX on WinRT.
Yep.
It's just awesome. And like you said, I mean, you guys have mm-hmm. done a lot of the work, and this mm-hmm. is, of course, the case for pretty much a lot of all of .NET, really.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have done a lot of work around making sure that this new model doesn't impact existing behavior yep. that much.
Exactly, yep.
So, right mm-hmm. on, man. It's nice to see that.
Yep, it's just like a .NET user can just walk up to it with the same abstractions that they know,
mm-hmm.
Including the async support, of course, which is an abstraction that happens to be new in this release as well. But await works for async operations from WinRT as well as taskoft.
Mm-hmm.
The same for Rx, right? For Rx, there's no reason not to sort of wrap things that WinRT expose in iSchedulers and iObservables. Like, if that's the abstraction you're comfortable with as a managed code developer to do event processing, well, there's a lot of events in WinRT. You should be able to do observable.fromEvent pattern, take them in as an iObservable sequence, and then you can do analytics on top of this, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like GeoAPIs or SMS APIs that expose some events. Well, if you want to process the events using an event handler, C# developers and the VB developers, the compiler people have done all the work to make those events look exactly like .NET events, so you can mm-hmm. do plus equals on them and minus equals. Rx is the same, like, because we have a different way of doing plus equals and minus equals, if you will. Right? Mm-hmm. So we just bridge with that as well.
Yeah. Excellent. You can link over your plus equals.
Yeah, you right? can link over.
Link, L-I-N-Q.
Yeah, exactly.
Link to events, man.
Yep, it's linked to events.
That's what Rx yep. is.
Yep.
Right? I mean, and
you still have a post, because I think
you do, and I'm going to go up on that, because, yep. you know, that's never changed.
Yep.
And that was the original way that you guys talked about it, and mm-hmm. I really like that. And it's, but Rx is very cool, too.
Yep.
Obviously, it's, you know, cure your asynchronous mm-hmm. blues. With the, it's a good
exactly.
drug to do that with, man.
Mm-hmm.
So always great to talk to you, Bart.
Yep. It's my pleasure.
And I really would like to see some of the cool apps that you guys make for Windows 8
mm-hmm.
with this, with using, when you're, you know, computing streams of data mm-hmm. using RX. I can yep. imagine some really cool apps.
Yeah, and you know, once the community gets their hands on this build of RX, I'm pretty sure people will start.
And this build is available
it.
Now.
Yep.
Thus, we're having this conversation.
Yep. At this point, the build will be available.
Yep. Excellent. So, guys, download it, and I'm not going to say what I wanted to say, because mm-hmm. apparently I can't say
oh,
rock
yes.
and roll anymore.
Oh, you did.
But, hey, man, nice yep. to talk to you, Bart. We'll come back and visit you again, maybe in a quarter.
Yeah, let's make quarterly
Bart check-ins.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Union. Cheers.